You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 174. Today's episode is all about the experiences of people that have chosen to make New Orleans their home. Questions about moving here are among the most frequent I get, so I thought we'd talk to three people who've done just that and have been here long enough to share their experiences. The last show was our annual Carnival and Mardi Gras episode with Arthur Hardy, publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about some of the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space that they built out during COVID, and I think they've done a really great job. My only criticism would be that they haven't publicized it enough. They're constantly adding to it, and again, if you aren't in town, it's a great way to sort of see some of the exhibit stuff, keep up with what's going on and all that. It's at hnoc.org/firstdraft. And right now they have two special exhibits. One is about Notre Dame in Paris. It started on November 15th, 2022, and it continues through March 1st of 23. It's probably the coolest type of exhibit I've ever seen. It covers sort of the 850-year history of Notre Dame. You get a tablet, and you are able to walk through the cathedral both through time and space. And it's updated like every 48 hours or so. So they're doing construction, obviously, right now since the fire several years ago. And if you were to see it on a Monday and go back and see it on a Friday, you would see the updates. So it's pretty amazing to see. It's a traveling exhibit. I don't know how many cities it is. I want to say that New Orleans might be the first or second in the United States. But again, that is worth checking out. As always, all their exhibits are free. It's really just sort of an amazing thing. The second is an exhibit that's been going for a while and ends on April 17th. It's called French Quarter Life, People and Places in the Vieux Carré. It features, I think, about two dozen artists from around the world who have used different mediums to capture their impressions of sort of everyday life in the French Quarter. So they have a great exhibit when you walk into their newest building. Sort of a screen, and you can kind of, again, step back through time and see the French Quarter over the years. But this is an exhibit that kind of does that just through various artists' work. So that's two exhibits well worth checking out in addition to their regular exhibits and, again, the online information I talked about. And I don't know why, but like the Historic New Orleans Collection, it's free. I mean, I do know why it's free, but it's free, but it somehow continues to fly under the radar, and I recommend it to everyone. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. And along the lines of planning a trip, one of our newest sponsors is a group called Sunset Chasers. If you need help planning a trip to New Orleans or really to anywhere, contact my partners over at Sunset Chasers. I used to offer a travel planning service to New Orleans, but as the kids got older, it just got to be too much for me. And I wanted to find someone who could do it, and I'm pretty picky about that, and I wanted someone who I thought had kind of the same love of New Orleans and the same kind of vibe, and I think I found them in Mallory and Allison. They not only can help you plan your trip here, but they are travel agents, so they can help you plan a trip anywhere. And speaking of which, they wanted me to remind you that as this comes out in mid to late January, it's the time to book a cruise if you're interested in a cruise. Whether you want to go to the Mediterranean, the Caribbean, or up or down the Mississippi River, which I'm going to do one of these days as a podcast. I'm going to take a Mississippi River cruise and record that. But Sunset Travel Agency is the place to go. You can schedule a call and book before March 31st, 2023, and receive a $200 onboard credit per cabin. Plus, anytime when you call them and mention Beyond 15, you'll get 15% off if you work with them. Another cool thing is there's no charge to meet with them by phone or Zoom. If you decide not to work with them, you will still walk away with some ideas about your trip. And if you do work with them, you will find that their fees are actually lower than what I was charging several years ago. So I think it's a good deal. If you do work with Mallory and Allison, I would love some feedback. Again, I was very picky about choosing a partner to do this work. I feel very confident in them, but I'd love to hear your experience. So with that, let's jump into the discussion. As I mentioned at the start, probably the questions that I get most in our Facebook group, in my DMs, on Patreon, are about moving to New Orleans. I did two episodes several years ago about moving, but today's episode's a little different. I thought I'd talk to several people who not only moved, but have now been New Orleanians for a while. I'm joined by Chris and Jen Marshall, who are longtime friends of Marie and I. You've heard about them before on the podcast. They've been on the podcast before. We introduced them years ago. They hit it off, got married, and then they moved to New Orleans. So Jen and Chris, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Good. It's good to have you guys. We're also joined by Kieran Pittman, another good friend who we met through the podcast. Kieran happens to be our neighbor now and recently became a tour guide with one of our longtime supporters, Two Chicks Walking Tours. Kieran, welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here.
Good. Thank you. So first, let's do some just kind of backgrounds and introductions. So Kieran, you obviously are not from New Orleans. Where are you from?
Right. So that's a little bit of a complicated story. I'll try to make it brief, but I grew up and was born and raised in Canada. I come from Newfoundland, which is way off the East Coast. Think about where the Titanic went down. So pretty remote.
Great.
A very special place. I migrated when I was a young woman to Little Rock, Arkansas, met a guy, these things happen. We ended up raising our family in his hometown, Little Rock, for almost 25 years. And I quite honestly thought that's where we were going to be until an exciting opportunity came up to move a little bit down the road. And here we are today. 4 years tomorrow is the anniversary of when we began that move.
Yeah. And so we're recording this on New Year's Eve. So 4 years mm-hmm. tomorrow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Chris and Jen, a little bit, obviously you guys have kind of a pattern all over the place, a lot of which I know, but a little bit of background and how did you get here?
So we're both fighting off mic about who's going to talk, and I've been elected apparently. So we're both from Virginia originally, actually, and I'll let Jennifer tell more of that story, but she was Marie's classmate back in middle school, and you guys introduced us at some point. I'm trying to cut to the chase a little bit, but we've lived all over the place individually. We met in New Orleans at Jazz Fest, May 1, 2015, as I've been reminded numerous times, and we decided to sort of migrate down here and live down here back in 2018. So we're pretty close to 4 years, too. We'll be 4 years on St. Patrick's Day-ish weekend. Five? Five. Yeah, see, that's why I'm married. This is somebody who... This is why Jennifer keeps me straight. Yeah? Well, you're good at counting. So, yeah, that's sort of how we got here. And honestly, I'm going to be honest. We're here because of Jennifer. I'm not going to lie. Jennifer has loved New Orleans for a long time. She worked at a company called MedVet. She's a veterinarian, and an opportunity came open, and she caught me at a weak moment, and here we are. And I only say that sort of half-jokingly. I mean, it's been a wonderful trip with her, so.
Yeah, I've loved New Orleans since Mark and Marie introduced me in 2008. I reconnected with Marie in 2007 when we were in Northern Virginia. I had just moved there, happened to be out at a restaurant, and Marie and Mark also happened to be there, and we reconnected. They lived just a mile down the road, the only people I knew in the area. As well as being friends in the DC area, we ended up coming down to New Orleans. And so I vividly remember my first trip down, and I remember Mark's parents being there for my first trip to Café du Monde and mm-hmm. my first spattering of powdered sugar as I bit into a beignet, and I've never looked back.
Yeah. And your first Jazz Fest. So that was
first Jazz Fest. Yeah.
Jen used to come with us to Jazz Fest while we didn't live here, and stay with my parents, and then after we moved here. And Chris was a coworker of mine, a peer of mine, and actually they both were in town for Jazz Fest at the same time, staying with us, and the rest is history. So, you know, the reason that I chose the three of you is because, again, I knew you were both, the three of you had been here 4 or 5 years, so enough time to have really settled in, and you've all settled in your own unique ways, and we'll get there. You kind of each talked about, well, certainly Chris and Jen, you've talked about why you moved here. What was the reason, Kieran, that you guys decided to move from Little Rock to New Orleans?
So the straightforward reason was an employment opportunity for my husband, who's a graphic designer. We kind of do things in a reverse order and had worked, you know, kind of followed our bliss early on, had been both self-employed for a long time in Little Rock. And now at this stage in our lives, we're both post 50, just brand new empty nesters. Thought, oh, you know, security and benefits and all of those things look really nice suddenly. So he had an opportunity to come down and work for a corporation headquartered here as a designer. The more romantic underlayer of that story was that I had been visiting here and, you know, like a lot of visitors to New Orleans, had come kind of, you know, been set up in a hotel through business or a pleasure trip, and had a very limited scope of experience. You know, there's just so much to take in when you wake up and roll out of your lobby and there you are in the quarter. And, you know, there are times that I was here that I never saw the river. I certainly never left the bounds of the French Quarter. So I had this very exciting but shallow experience of the place. In 2018, I brought my mom down for her 75th birthday, wanted to show her the town. We had a wonderful time. And what was different about that is I made the decision to stay in Algiers Point. Mm-hmm. We stayed at an owner-occupied Airbnb. And this is one of the reasons I'll never come down really, really hard on the whole very controversial Airbnb mm-hmm. issue, because for me, it was a game changer. I did stay in an owner-occupied double. And it was the first time I'd been out of the French Quarter, staying in a neighborhood. And it occurred to me as I would take these walks in the morning along the levee that, oh, people live here. And it kind of planted this idle daydream, and it was nothing but. We were very happy living in Little Rock. But, you know, I had this kind of little seed of an idea that people actually live in this amazing place. It's not just all for me. And to show you how very shallow my experience was, I remember my mother, you know, in the middle of our birthday day celebration in the French Quarter, she turned to me with just stars in her eyes and said, "This is so amazing." She said, "I wonder, do people live in the French Quarter?" And I said, "God, no." You know, which is so ignorant. And, you know, it just goes to show how easy it is to miss that this is a real place. It's not just a theme park for tourists. So that was a different kind of visit. And it wasn't just a month or two later that Patrick, my husband, came to me out of the blue and synchronistically said, "There's this opportunity. I don't suppose you would consider moving to New Orleans." I said, "Buddy, you got me just at the right moment. Indeed, if I were going to leave and move anywhere, it would be to New Orleans." So we just kept walking through the open doors and one green light after the other. And here we are.
And you guys made the decision. You had 3 kids at home at the
time? Yeah. So we came at an interesting time in the season of our life as a family. And then, of course, we had no idea what an interesting time it was going to be in the season of life in general, because right. We moved in 2019. But yeah, we brought with us one freshman from high school. He just finished his freshman year in Little Rock at Central High there. And so we moved with him in tow. We thought that would be it. But at the very last minute, I have 3 sons. So mm-hmm. my oldest son at the last minute, who had already been graduated from high school a couple of years, had done a semester at college, decided that was not for him right now. He'd always been very passionate about cooking. He'd cook during his summers in high school. And at the very last minute, he decided to come down with us and see what opportunities were here for him in New Orleans, which turned out to be a very brilliant move. He's done quite well here now as a sous chef in the city. My middle child, we didn't quite get him tamped down into the swamp enough. You know, he loves to come visit us. He's also cooking. He's in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So he'd graduate from high school just as we were moving. So mm-hmm. he was a free agent at that time. Yeah.
And we'll get back to that. That was, again, one of the many reasons that I picked the 3 of you was that I obviously knew you and Patrick had kids and Chris and Jen don't have kids. And that's one of the things I want to talk about when we get to it. But the next thing kind of shifting a little bit is I want to talk about how did you all go through the process respectively of figuring out where to live? Because I think that can be a hard thing. Like you said, you didn't even realize that people lived in the French Quarter. And I don't think I think people come here and don't think that, right? They do think it's sort of Disney World a little bit. So maybe Chris and Jen, you guys start. How did you sort of figure out, and you can share as much or as little about where you actually live, but how did you kind of take in the landscape and figure out? Because you had only seen what you had seen through me for the most part.
Yeah, my trips down had been, as Karen had said, sort of French Quarter hotel experiences, or once Mark and Marie moved here, staying with with them, so I had a limited exposure to other neighborhoods in New Orleans. I think where we ended up is happenstance. We had a short period of time once the job opportunity presented itself to move down here to look for housing. I think we had 26 houses lined up to look at in one weekend. House number 13, as it turned out, was the place that we landed and the place that we love. And as I have told many people, we are in the Irish Channel. I feel so fortunate to be there. Our house is wonderful, but more importantly, our neighborhood is wonderful, and it truly is a neighborhood. It's the first place that I have lived that I know so many people mm-hmm. in walking distance. I know probably 80% of the people in a four-block radius, and some of that's through dog walking, but some of it is just right. the nature of New Orleans. But I will say, as much as I love our neighborhood, and I can't imagine ever leaving our block because I love our neighbors so much, there are so many wonderful places here. I think there's so many alternate New Orleans realities where mm-hmm. we could have ended up in the Bywater or the Marigny or Bayou St. John or Gentilly. So many places we could have ended up and been equally happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you guys ended up in one of many neighborhoods that you can almost stay self-contained in your neighborhood if you want.
Absolutely.
You can walk to just about any amenity and certainly places to eat and festivals and all of that stuff. You can walk to the streetcar. It's been years now, but we've done an episode about the Irish Channel. Mm-hmm. Kieran, you guys took a little different approach in that you've lived several spots throughout the city.
Yeah.
So how did kind of that go about?
Listeners will find that we rarely do things a straightforward way. Yeah, we did the cafeteria plan of neighborhoods. So when we knew that this was a possibility moving down here, I am a big podcast fan. I get very immersive about research. And I thought, well, there's probably a podcast about life in New Orleans. And it didn't take me long to find your podcast and just started listening to it nonstop. It was such a great resource. I know it embarrasses you to hear me say just how important that was, but it really was. And the dividends of it have continued to bear fruit in our experience here. One of which was hearing about Liz Wood, who mm-hmm. was the realtor and sponsor at the time for the podcast. So when it was looking like, okay, it's time to find a base, that's who I called and didn't really talk to anybody else. So we moved in stages because we had kids still in high school at that time, and I had a house to sell in Little Rock. Patrick came down ahead of us. So Liz found him the perfect little bachelor studio apartment down in the Lower Garden District, right on Magazine Street. Mm-hmm. We spent the first 6 months with me just coming down, sometimes with a kid, sometimes not, on long weekends. And I'm like, how many guys get to do this in their 50s, have this little adventure, have their woman come down and visit with them and then go home on Monday and no messy divorce or alimony payments? So that was a great kind of way to kind of get introduced to the area and start wrapping our heads around where we wanted to be, because we would spend those weekends a lot looking around and mm-hmm. exploring with help from Liz, of course. When it was time to come, we had fallen in love with Algiers Point and thought that was going to be the spot for us. And I should say that we moved to a much higher priced market here. When we left Little Rock, we didn't realize how good we had it in terms of cost of living. So we experienced a bit of sticker shock. So that, you know, mm-hmm. gave us some parameters we had to work within. And we thought Algiers Point was going to be great because you get a lot more bang for your buck over there. And it's still just so wonderful and charming. We couldn't sell our house at that time in time to close that deal, so that fell through. And in kind of a panic, we just leased a place for 12 months. That was in around the University Hospital area. Some people call it, you know, lower mid-city. It's really Tulane Gravier. Mm-hmm. And about as different from our life in suburban Little Rock as you could possibly
right.
get.
Right.
And it was a great introduction to New Orleans. It was like, rip the Band-Aids all off. We're here. This is a different experience. It's time to get out of our comfort zone, mix it up in every conceivable way. It was a fantastic way to kind of just as say, get immersed in the culture here. We spent a year there, and then we started, of course, we were looking all the time for what our home would be. And I swear we did not stalk you, but as it happened, we found our wonderful home just two blocks away from Mark and Marie. Mm-hmm. We absolutely love the neighborhood. We just could not be more delighted with where we are.
So Kieran is the closest podcast listener that lives to me. That's not true. My
that
neighbors
you know
live. Of. Right. That my neighbors listen, but that my neighbors, incidentally, are sponsors, the occasional wife. But the closest someone that I met through the podcast that I know of, right? There's actually lots of business owners that live right in here. The occasional wife, Drew, who owns Dirty Coast, lives just almost a rock's throw from here. Justin Nystrom, who's been on the show, wrote the book Sicilian New Orleans. He's a professor and an author and a photographer. He lives, again, about a block away. So yeah, there's quite a bit here, real close. So since you mentioned it, you mentioned Liz, and that's probably a good time to talk about a couple of sponsors, including Liz. Because the most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans, I actively sought out a realtor. In fact, I had a realtor on the show as a guest on that two-part episode I mentioned earlier. But I met Liz. Liz's family owns La Jouet, which is a toy store on Airline Highway that's been there for 50-plus years. But Liz is a realtor, and I really liked her approach. I had heard a little bit from people. I was recommending her and had heard good experiences from podcast listeners and people in our Facebook group. And I think she's great. I think she's really good at helping kind of what the three of you just described. New Orleans is a bunch of neighborhoods, and that's fun and exciting and also a little overwhelming, right? Like what fits our price point, what fits our lifestyle. You've mentioned kids. You guys don't have kids. You want a place to walk the dogs. You want to be close in your community. There's just a lot of things, right? Depending on where you work. I'm able to get to work without getting on the interstate, which is really nice and was important to me. You know, but people have different things. And that's where Liz comes in. I think she's really great at kind of assessing a client. She's open to helping people with rentals and purchases, which is not always the case with realtors. She takes a long view that, much like you did, Kieran, a renter is likely, if they have a good experience, to perhaps turn into a buyer someday. But she's really good at that. She makes the process fun and easy. Reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Several members, again, we're talking to a couple here, but several members of our community, and when I say several, I mean dozens at this point, have done just that and worked with Liz to rent or buy homes here. The other thing that really sets Liz apart compared to a lot of realtors that I know is what she does after she helps you find a home. She really does take you in and become friends with you and invite you to stuff and is very inclusive. I think she enjoys that as much as anything, that not only is she helping you, but she's like building her network of friends. And I'm getting nods around the table. And certainly Liz and I have become friends. But she does a great job. I would not have her as a sponsor otherwise. But again, LizWoodRealty.com. And then kind of along those lines, the next thing that happens, of course, if you're buying a house, unless you're coming from a place where you make a lot of money off the sale, is you probably need to secure financing. And that's where Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage comes in. Liz uses Tommy a lot. We used Tommy. I felt very good about him. As it turns out, this is a small world. Tommy lives four blocks from me. We used Tommy several years ago on a refinance. We've lived in many places like Chris and Jen have. That process has not always gone smoothly. He and his team at Gulf Coast made it super, super simple. Almost like I thought something was missing, but it was just so easy. They have the routine down. We then went back within a year. We were thinking about moving. We ultimately didn't, but we went through the process again, not on a refi this time, but on a new loan. It was the exact same thing, just as smooth as could be. I can't recommend Tommy and his team enough. We'll put links in the show notes, which will be at beyondbourbonst.com/174, but that's Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage. So again, you know, not only do I want you to get some ideas from the show today, but those are the people that I recommend. And there are plenty of people. I've mentioned the group. It's a Beyond Bourbon Street crew, K-R-E-W-E, on Facebook. But I get messages from people that aren't in the group all the time that either are patrons or listen to the podcast, or certainly Liz keeps me updated on all the leads she gets from the podcast. You know, Kieran, you mentioned that when I started the podcast, which was, we just celebrated our 7th anniversary the other day, which kind of like, I can't believe I've been doing this for 7 years, wow. But I never had this idea that people would use podcast apps as a search engine in terms of I want to move somewhere and sort of Google, right? But go in Apple Podcast or whatever, or search New Orleans podcast, had no idea about that. And that has certainly shifted how I think about doing the podcast. You know, when I do episodes on neighborhoods, it is with an eye towards certainly the visitor, but with a thought about trying to give a reflection of a neighborhood from the perspective of somebody's going to look up this podcast and be trying to think about, do I want to move here? And so trying to give them a bit of the flavor of what it might be like to not just visit for a festival or go to dinner or whatever, but to live in a neighborhood. So it's interesting that you said that because I had no idea. So kind of moving on, I want to talk about maybe a little bit harder thing. What concerns, if any, did you guys have when you thought about moving to New Orleans?
Yeah, so I'm going to jump on that, Mark. I think I made alluded to the fact, stop laughing. I think I may have alluded to the fact that, you know, when Jennifer first broached the topic with me, it was not exactly the top of my list. I mean, I worked for a brewery in Cincinnati. I was in craft beer for a bit and, you know, I really enjoyed that. Bottom line, you know, Jennifer loved it and wanted to move down. So I would be a fool to say, you know, dig my heels in and say no. I've moved a lot, like you have, like Jennifer has, like it sounds like you have. And I was kind of done with moving, and I was pretty happy in Cincinnati. Well, I'm pretty happy here, too, as it turns out. So as far as concerns go, I didn't really have any particular concerns. I've moved a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I had some sticker shock coming from some pretty high-priced areas. I mean, I've lived in D.C.
Yeah.
I owned a house in the district. I owned a house in Portland, Oregon, which is now worth more money than I care to think about. I don't own it anymore, so that's why I don't want to think about it. So there was a little bit of sticker shock in our neighborhood, but it turns out we actually got a house on the cheap based on
relatively
what the current values are. Yeah, so that was a concern. Also, I think maybe more for, I don't want to speak for you, Jen, but maybe more for you than me. You had some safety security concerns, I think, coming down. I've lived in some areas of cities in the district, for example, and in Denver that were, you know, maybe considered a little bit less safe, but I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I think we did have some security concerns. But, you know, as Jennifer says, now we know like 80% of the people within four blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, and I think there is always a transition when you move from one place to another, and Cincinnati, Ohio is, you know, about as safe as you can get in terms of neighborhoods. So I think I had a perception that safety was more of a concern. I will say within a month or so of moving to our neighborhood, that concern was gone. And that's not to say that there is no crime in New Orleans. There is. But I think for me, it was more a matter of adjusting to our neighborhood, adjusting to urban living. And so that no longer is something that I think about on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And how about you, Karen?
Yeah, I would echo, certainly security was a concern. You know, we lived in a very idyllic post-war suburban kind of Mayberry experience in Little Rock. Kind of had the best of both an urban environment and feeling like we were in the suburbs. And it was a delightful place to raise our children. So that was a big thing on my radar. I will say that I spent a lot of time looking at crime maps. Don't look at the crime maps.
Agreed. Don't look at Nextdoor.
Next
Door. Yeah, right. You got a negative bias comes in there. Mm-hmm. What I discovered, I don't want to downplay, you know, as you've frankly discussed on the podcast, Mark, recently, we're going through somewhat of a crime surge. Mm-hmm. That is happening elsewhere in the country. It's actually happening in Little Rock. What I discovered when we moved to New Orleans, that New Orleans is compact. It's like you've said many times, it's block by block. We live cheek by jowl here. It's kind of an intimacy. The security issues, the crime problems, the friction, all of these issues that we encounter here, hear about here, you know what? They exist in Little Rock. They exist in Cincinnati. They exist anywhere in the United States. There is no problem in New Orleans that you do not have in the rest of the United States. What we have here is less insulation from it. We do not have the luxury of, you know, hiding out from these issues. And frankly, I don't think we need to hide out from them. So for us, it was, and I say this from the vantage point of privilege and of having children who are a little older. I don't know if you interviewed me back when my kids were small, if I would feel differently. But early on in our experience coming here, I felt very fortunate that we moved when we did, because I knew that the kinds of social issues, crime issues, problems that were kind of more in our face here were totally, I had the luxury of having this barrier between myself and those issues where I had lived before. So it was a wake-up call for me and a timely one. Other things, schooling. You know, we came with a kid in high school. We'd had a very positive public school experience in Little Rock. People told us right out of the gate that that was not going to be a possibility here in New Orleans. Forget about it. Get ready to just shell out a lot for tuition. Every family has to make their own decisions based on what's best for them and their child and their particular needs and ages and stages, and all of those things are complex. But I just chose not to take that statement, blanket statement, at face value. And I did a little digging. You know, we could go on and on about the charter system here. It's all kinds of messed up.
Yes.
But, you know, there are options in the public system. And there were options for us, and two good options. We ended up trying one and going to another. My son graduated from public school here, Morris Jeff Community High School. I definitely encourage newcomers, new families to the area to check it out. I thought it was a fantastic school. He had a great experience there the brief time he was there in person. His senior year, for sure.
Yeah.
So schooling was a thing. And then the other big thing was just, you know, we'd spent 25 years in Little Rock. We had a support system there. We were very embedded into our community. And how's that going to look here? Transplanting a family, a life, and who are we going to turn to when, you know, we need a neighbor and in a hurricane and, you know, all these things that we just knew who to go to in Little Rock if there's a storm or an ice storm, you know, here, like rebuilding that network is nothing to sneeze at. That turned out to be kind of the most daunting thing for us. And New Orleans can be, it's a tight-knit community. People like yourself have been born here. Their roots go back way far here. They've gone to high school here. They know who, all the people they went to high school with. They've all stayed here. They married people they went to high school with. So it's hard, it can be hard to break into that.
Yeah, you know, that's a topic. So James Cullen has been on the show several times. He did a lot of the photography in my book. He's online as the Accidental Cajun. He and I talk about that a lot, in that he is from New Jersey, but worked in New York as a chef, works here as a chef, has been here. Forgive me, James, I'm going to screw this up. I know it's at least 10 years, you know, but he says that New Orleanians that have been born here and that maybe go back several generations sort of sometimes say, well, you can never be a New Orleanian if you weren't born here. And I sort of blow that off because I was born here, although I moved away. I was looking, I think it's about 70% of my guests, and I haven't had a guest obviously on every episode, but about 70% of my guests are actually non-native New Orleanians. And that's somewhat intentional. My mom has been here seven or eight generations. There are listeners and friends that have been here seven or eight generations. But I personally don't think that's what makes you a New Orleanian. I think what makes you a New Orleanian is a love for the city and getting engaged in the city. And that's kind of heads up for you guys. That's the next topic I'm going to hit you with how you've immersed yourselves, because all three of you have done that. You know, I don't get to decide, but I don't give a damn about how many decades, because I can put my family lineage against anyone's in the city. Maybe one generation less, but I don't think that makes you a New Orleanian. I really think it's, do you love the city? Do you support it? Do you, your point about crime is really interesting in that how compact we live, not only as a community. New Orleans is not that big geographically, and you have the lake and the river kind of hemming us in, right, and making it even tighter. And then in many neighborhoods, and I think about where you guys live, Jen and Chris, in the Irish Channel, there's that density, right? I lived in a high-rise condo in D.C., and that was a different kind of density. But where you guys live, it's dense. The streets are small. The houses are right next to each other. You know, you could toss the cup of sugar through a window to somebody.
And we have done that.
So, you know, it's tight. But I hadn't thought about that. The other thing about the crime, I think you're right. The crime maps will scare the hell out of you. I don't think you should do that. I think you should talk to the locals. If you're listening to this podcast, you have a built-in community. You should go in the Facebook group, or you should reach out to those of us and get some honest advice. We chose to move back to New Orleans with 10-week-old twins, you know, and so for us, and we wanted to live in the city. We thought that was really important for my job It was just important to me, having been a New Orleanian. And so we put some parameters around that that were difficult. Marie insisted that we have off-street parking and that we have a gate. And in the area we chose to live, sort of on the edge of uptown New Orleans, that's hard to do if you don't have unlimited funds, which we did not have. I think the sticker shock issue is interesting. Before Katrina, this was an inexpensive place to live, and it is not that. I mean, I get nowadays with inflation and across the country, places have gotten expensive, but the shortage of housing, and then I think certainly post-Katrina, you've had people come from very expensive places where it feels to them like this is a good deal, and that has really, you know, inflated prices, if you will, on top of which, because of hurricanes and floods, insurance is really expensive. You mentioned education. If you choose to go the private route, then you're paying taxes, of course, and still paying for education. I think it's interesting that you guys made a successful, the decisions you all made, Kieran, you and Patrick, with your kids in public schools worked out. Two of the moderators of our Facebook group, Andrew and Jennifer Eaton, also made a similar choice and have their kids in one of the best schools in the city that happens to be a public school, you know, and have made that work. We've chosen to go the private school route, and with that comes the expenses and, you know, all of that. But that's certainly something you have to think about. Where I want to kind of transition next is one of the things that I am impressed about the three of you, and that I think makes a New Orleanian, whether you're born here or have lived here for a couple of years, is immersing yourself in all that the city has to offer. And all three of you have done that in a variety of ways. So I'll kind of give you a prompt, but then let you go whichever way you want, or in addition to. Chris and Jen, I know that, and you are both wearing jerseys, I know that you just came from Finn McCool's, where you have found a community there over your shared love of soccer. You are involved in carnival organizations, so maybe talk about that a little bit. So if the two of you would, and I'll look at you first, Jen, to just maybe talk about how you guys have become part, you know, how you've become New Orleanians. What does that mean to you? What have you done?
Yeah, and I want to go back a little bit to the idea of this being a sort of a difficult place to break into if you haven't lived here. And this is not anything against Kieran, your experience, but I have had that same experience in Cincinnati, in other places that I've lived, and Richmond, Virginia, where I grew up, I think very much is like that if you haven't grown up there. For whatever reason, I had the opposite experience here, and I just felt a part of the city from the moment we got here. And that may well be that I was embracing the city more so than I have other places I've lived. I think that's very possible. But
you had been here a lot with us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And in the neighborhoods a lot.
Yeah. And I think every time I came to visit, I left thinking, why don't I move here? Or why wasn't I born here? But I have found it very easy to make friends here, to be part of the community. In fact, I have to, and Chris will attest to this, I feel like the bigger issue is how do I limit the things I'm trying to.
I think all three of you are guilty of that, actually.
Yeah. But so Chris and I, since we arrived, Mark alluded to Finn McCool's, which is where we go to watch soccer, and we have a fabulous community there. It's a wonderful neighborhood bar, great for soccer, but just wonderful people overall. And then through his work, we joined the crew of Red Beans. Chris had worked at a brewery when we first moved here. And it's going to sound odd to anyone who doesn't live here, but they were beaning a hearse, meaning that they were using hot glue to glue beans to an actual hearse for a Mardi Gras crew. And we thought, great, that sounds like fun. We'll join. And so we joined that. And then have joined a couple of other crews. We are actually going to be riding in a Mardi Gras crew on a float for the very first time this year. So that will be a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think even more than the events, for me, what I love here is being a part of the neighborhood. Just as a recent example, I was working on Christmas Day. Chris and I had planned to cook a big dinner. I was tired. I had worked a long day. Got a text at the end of the day from a neighbor for whom I had made red beans when he was sick with COVID. And he said, hey, I've got a pot of gumbo and I've got some set aside for you. And that was our Christmas dinner. And that's, I'm like getting verklempt. But I mean, that's New Orleans in a nutshell. I mean, that's people looking out for one another.
Yeah. And so the last episode, which none of the three of you have heard because it hasn't come out yet, I was talking to Arthur Hardy. And one of the things that is very different post-Katrina is the opportunity for people to get involved in Mardi Gras at a much more inclusive level. And you mentioned the Crew of Red Beans, which, for those that don't know, decorates suits. And maybe, Chris, you can talk about that a little bit in a moment, but does a lot of sort of philanthropic work. Kieran, you can talk about your experience as well. But I think those kind of things before Katrina, Carnival and Mardi Gras were much more closed to people. There were certainly opportunities. Orpheus comes to mind, but is very expensive, has a lot of out-of-towners. But the marching crews that you guys are parts of didn't exist. Really, a lot of credit goes to Muses for putting that in place and welcoming that as a part of Mardi Gras when they came on board. And again, you can hear about that in the last episode. But Chris, what about you?
So yeah, I actually do want to go back to Crew of Red Beans a little bit. So it's true that I learned about Crew of Red Beans when I was working at Urban South, and we were beaning a hearse on the premises there, which everybody thought was odd, maybe except for me and one or two other people. But so the focus of that is kind of as an homage, I guess, to Second Lines and that culture, and also Mardi Gras Indian culture. It's a crew that, in a very creative way, uses legumes to make suits, right? So it's not as intricate, and I will take nothing away from the Mardi Gras Indians who actually spend all year making a suit, but it's a very similar kind of thing. So we you know, have a theme. We could be an individual theme, not necessarily a crew theme. And we make a suit. We go out on Lundi Gras Monday, which, of course, is the day of red beans and rice around here for reasons that you've talked about before, I'm sure, on the podcast, and all of that. And that's all a lot of fun. But really, what I want to touch on is the philanthropic stuff that you talked about. So Devin, who is the guy who founded the crew, which, by the way, that story by itself is amazing to me. He was like, he sort of got here and he said, this is really cool, this whole parade culture and all that. I think he came from Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. And he said, well, I clearly want to make a parade. Now, who would think of that, right? And he just goes out the next year and he says, we're just going to have a parade. So started a Crew of Red Beans, and here we are about 10 or 12 years later. But when the pandemic started, he was really interested in helping the frontline responders as part of that. So EMTs and people in ERs and hospitals and so on. And also that was a way to keep local restaurants afloat and local musicians afloat as well, because he used them to deliver food. And I spent 6.5 days a week, pretty much full time. I was, as we say, between jobs at that point. So I spent a lot of time being the person to order all those meals. And I had another crew coworker, if you will. We were all volunteers, by the way, who I'd pass it off to and say, okay, here are all the numbers. You figure out how they're going to get from A to B. And that's really something that that was totally organic. And one of the things I love about red beans, and I don't want to make this a commercial for red beans, but one of the things I love about red beans is that, God love him, you know, we see a need, and Devin says, well, we can do that. He's one of those guys who never, doesn't understand that it's not possible to do something. He just goes out and does it. So I've met lots of cool people through Red Beans. You mentioned Finn McCool's. Yeah, we have our, we're Arsenal fans. Well, I'm an Arsenal fan. Jennifer is a convert.
I'm a fan.
You're a fan. She is a fan. It's a little bit like a religious thing. She's actually more adamant than I am about it in a lot of ways. And some of those Venn diagrams overlap, actually. So there are some people in Red Beans who we see at Finn's fairly often. So yeah, that's a little bit about that. And you're right about the marching crews. And I think, and I'm going to get this wrong, but there was a book that says, it was titled something like I Want to Do That, or I Can Do That, or something like that, that came out a couple of years ago, that talks all about the marching crews. And it's not just Red Beans, it's Baby Dolls. And it's just, you know, there's a whole list of things.
Yeah, Arthur actually mentioned in this year's Mardi Gras guide that you guys have in front of you, there's an article about the Baby Dolls. And so I won't spoil that, but sort of, again, like so many things, ties to the past and kind of has a resurrection. And I think you're right, Red Beans. And I am drawing a blank, and I shouldn't, because my good friend Sherry Heller is a member. There is a
Dame de Perlage.
Thank you. the Dumpster Pillage, and I apologize, Sherry. I know I will get a phone call soon, but I love you. They also take to, they actually do bead suits, very much in the style of the Mardi Gras Indians. But I think in both cases, Red Beans and their organization, you know, before somebody jumps to the, well, it's cultural appropriation, I think there have been great pains made to sort of not only respect and to learn from, but in their own way, continue that and support them. You know, many of the Mardi Gras Indians spend a tremendous amount of money and are dependent upon people being generous and helping to support them to afford to pay and for the work that they do on those suits. Some of those suits cost thousands of dollars, and they wear them once or twice a season, and then they retire them, and they're not used ever again. So, you know, the other thing that really strikes me about Red Beans, and he's been on my list for a while to interview, is this idea that, again, we're back to, this is what aggravates me about, well, I'm a 6th, 7th, 8th generation New Orleanian. He's not. He came here, saw a need, and said, you know what, I'll figure out a way to help this need that was critical. And frankly, we weren't meeting that need. So there's an organization now in place, it's been in place several years, that has contributed to the city in a really positive way and also is inclusive, to kind of get through to this other point of lots of people from here and lots of people not from here are part of that organization, but they come together to help the city that they now live in and love. And that's what gets me really fired up about, well, you don't, you know, you didn't go to high school here. Well, I did. But you know what? There are plenty of my classmates that aren't as involved as some new New Orleanians. And I, you know, I just think that's an attitude and a cultural decision. And there are plenty that are. There are plenty of 6th, 7th, 8th generations that are super involved in the community. But that cuts both ways, I think.
Well, so I think part of that is we do live cheek by jowl. I mean, you said it a minute ago.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
You see a need, you want to help take care of that need. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the compactness. You know, Jennifer and I moved out of our house because we're doing a renovation currently, and we're living in a house that we also own that we bought, by the way, through Liz Wood and Tommy. So thank you guys. And it's a rental house that we have, and it's 1.3 miles from our front door of our normal house. And we pass through one of the toniest neighborhoods in town to get to it.
Right.
And then we immediately show up where we live now, which is in Central City, which is not one of the toniest neighborhoods in town. But let me tell you something. When you walk your dog around there, nobody cares where you're from or where you got, you know, how you got there. It's just everybody's like, hey, I love your dogs, you know, and how are you doing? And that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
and a really, really, as you guys are going to experience soon, a really, really center of culture in New Orleans when we get to Super Sunday and the Mardi Gras Indians. I know I've talked about the Indians on past episodes, but for those of you that are hearing that term for the first time, Super Sunday is the only day of the year where Mardi Gras Indian groups, gangs they're called, are, but not in a negative connotation, but where they parade together. So otherwise it's random. They may come across each other on Mardi Gras morning or St. Joseph's Day night. But on Super Sunday, there are two routes. One is in Central City and the other is on Bayou St. John. And it is your chance to see dozens of organizations come together and parade together. And so that's really unique. Where you guys live is just a couple of blocks from the main part of that. So you're going to get to experience that. You know, again, we're recording this on New Year's Eve, in just a couple of months, you're going to see that.
And New Year's Day, there is going to be a second line against gun violence. Starts at Tipitina's, but is going to come within a couple of blocks of our of our place. So
you also are, like, we are in this hiatus of second line season that kind of runs sort of from the middle of the summer until just before Thanksgiving, and then picks. You know, then you have these occasional ones like that. You are in a spot where almost every Sunday, the downside is you're not going to be driving anywhere. The upside is you can walk three blocks and go to a second line pretty much every Sunday.
There's no downside to that.
Right.
No.
So that's a pretty neat thing. Kieran, how about your experience in terms of getting involved in the city?
Yeah, you know, I have some practical suggestions and experience, but I kind of want to skip ahead and just kind of zoom out and talk about just, you know, as an expatriate, as an immigrant myself, my whole adult life have spent pondering what does it mean to belong to a place? You know, I come from a place, Newfoundland, very exceptional culture, interesting, you know, unique, and it's an island. So I get the island mentality, you know, that sense of like, you're never going to earn your place here unless, you know, we can count back how, you know, all your people on all the sides come back. And you know, it's funny because on recently this week on the Facebook group, there was a comment that, mm-hmm. you know, about, you know, well, we can't have tour guides who are not from New Orleans. And of course, a year ago or so, that would have made me feel a little insecure and defensive. And I just smiled at it because uh-huh. I feel very secure. I did 100 hours training coming right out of Mardi Gras last year to become a tour guide. I wanted to find a way to contribute back to this culture that I previously experienced and consumed at a very shallow level. I wanted to go deeper myself, and I wanted to invite visitors like me in the future to go deeper. Mm-hmm. So my whole angle when I give a tour, whether I walk on my own or with two chicks, which is so fun to do, is to, I talk about the newcomers, you know, all the layers, the gumbo, we use that metaphor, you know, it's a good one. It's a reason we use it a lot. The mix of people who came before the colonizers even got here, this place was called Babancha by some, land of many tongues in a Choctaw tongue. You know, it's baked in to this to be a meeting place and a convergence, and new people come. And one thing I really love about New Orleans that I think makes it so special is its resistance to be frozen in amber. And I do meet people who are from here way back, and they'll tell me like, oh, you can't go move in that neighborhood. You can't go walk in that neighborhood, or things are done, or you don't live, you know, all these, they're gatekeepers basically. Mm-hmm. And their ideas of the culture and the place are frozen, they're fossilized, which that happens. I'm not blaming, you know, that happens in my home culture of Newfoundland, people do that. But New Orleans has a particular resistance to that. Think about the word culture in science and biology. It's a living, you know, organic thing. It's bubbling, it's fermenting. And whether it's a Mardi Gras tradition or Mardi Gras Indian tradition or, you know, the boundaries of neighborhoods or what's, you know, who goes where and does what, someone always comes along new and goes, yeah, no, I just reject that. And we're going to do it different now. And it's delightful because it's what makes this the tension between the gatekeeping of the culture and what the desire to preserve and the recognition that it's something very special. And then this kind of new energy that comes in and messes with it continually makes a really delicious thing going on all the time. I like to be part of that. So I get it. You know, I get, and it is a special place, you know? So when someone makes a statement about things are done this way or not done that way, or that's the way it is, you know, what I think they're saying, the emotional spiritual truth underneath those statements is they recognize that this is a special place, that it's worth fighting over and debating and talking about who owns what and what belongs to whom and who can do what and what's changing things too fast and what needs to change. And so, you know, those are juicy conversations that are going on all the time, and they wouldn't be going on if it was just any place.
Mm-hmm. I think that's well put. The tension I see when newcomers come is that if you come in and want to change without first learning and accepting the culture, that is very threatening to a 300-plus-year-old city. And then you add what we've talked about already with the rising costs, and it tends to push people out, and it tends to push minorities out, who are in many cases the keepers and the creators of much of our culture. I think that's where the tension comes in. You know, someone that moves into a neighborhood, for instance, where there are second lines and then complains about the noise and the traffic on a Sunday. From my perspective, you should shut up and not have moved into that neighborhood if you didn't know what you were getting into. Now, if you want to be a part of it and maybe spin off of that and, you know, all those things, I think that's wonderful. But that's where, from my perspective, that tension comes in and that sort of insecurity. At the same time, I agree with you. I had Lane Kaplan Stevenson. I think Levinson. She did a project as we were approaching the 300 years anniversary, NOLA at 300. It was a wonderful podcast. It's still out there. It's no longer being updated. But she and I talked about that idea of New Orleans has been here as a place for thousands of years, and even as a colony was very diverse and has continued to be. So it's sort of like, well, what right do you have all of a sudden to say, well, it was fine for all those years, but it's not now. But again, for me as a native, I think the pushback is when someone comes in and then all of a sudden wants to change something that's very near and dear to our culture. preserve, respect, add to it, I think is all fine. But to complain about it, I think is where the problems come in a lot of ways. What advice would you all each give to someone considering moving to New Orleans?
Get out and just be part of your community. You know, meet your neighbors, meet people from other parts of town. I think that a lot of the impetus to try to help, and I guess I'm going to use air quotes there, but to try to help comes from having interacted with people and rubbing up against people, right? Who who have different experiences from you and who maybe have different attitudes from you and learning from them. You talked about the word learning. I mean, that's, you know, it's weird. It's so weird to talk about, you know, wait a minute, I moved to a city in America and I got to learn about it before I can start, you know, complaining or whatever. Now, I will say there are things that I can complain about, but that's not, we haven't talked about that yet.
Right. I'm going to ask.
I'm sure you are. Yeah. But one of the things that really, I used to kind of blow it off, but you hear a lot that New Orleans is not actually in the United States. It's the most northern Caribbean city.
Right.
And I think that if you can shift your mindset to really understand and believe that, you're going to be a much happier New Orleanian than if you are expecting it to be Chicago or Cincinnati or, you know, pick a city. And I know all cities have their problems and dysfunctions, and maybe Chicago has more than most. But I think that if you shift your perspective a little bit and embrace that kind of multiculturalism, I mean, it is. It's it's forever. It's been a meeting place and a crossroads, and there's all sorts of, you know, amazing history to learn about here. I think if you can shift your perspective and be that guy or woman or being, you know, you're going to be a lot better off. So be part of it.
I would say the biggest shock for me moving here was sort of that mental transition from New Orleans as my wonderful, happy vacation place where I came to visit you and Marie and could leave the cares of the world behind, to being a place where I have to do grocery shopping and clean my house and all of the day-to-day things. I think, I mean, as silly as that sounds, because any place you live, you're going to have to do that. It was a rude awakening for me, because I loved and still love New Orleans. I mean, unreasonably so, but it took a little bit of time for me to adjust to living here as opposed to visiting here. And so I think it's just something to be aware of, not a reason not to move by any means. The only other thing I would say, even though Chris and I were so fortunate and love where we live, is if you have the opportunity, I think being able to rent someplace and get to know the city a little bit before you decide on where you're going to buy is a great opportunity. I mean, I think we might have ended up exactly where we are, but I think for people who perhaps haven't had much time in the city, it would be great to be able to get to know. I mean, there is an embarrassment of riches here in terms of the culture and the neighborhoods. And I can think, again, of 15 different places I would love to live. But it's just getting to know the city a little bit and figuring out the spot that's right for you.
Yeah, I think there's often more than one right spot.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. On the flip side, right, it is again, you know, to bring up Liz, it's where a good realtor really helps.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult. It's almost like microclimates, you know. It's the city is not, New Orleans is not New Orleans is not New Orleans. Not to say that it's better or worse, but there's a very, even the neighborhood where Kieran and I live compared to the neighborhood where you live, it's a very different neighborhood. Our neighborhood is not as walkable to amenities, if you will, right? We have a little bit more space than you guys have. They're both fine. I would be fine in either place, but they're very different places, right? So I think there's that. Anything you would add to that?
Yeah, just, you know, be open. You know, you just be open. Drop all expectations. You know, if someone tells you this is the way it is, you know, you're going to find four other people who say that's not the way it is. I mean, just, you know, just hold everything, be curious. It's a wonderful place to be in that kind of mindset of just discovery. I'll never get to the bottom of it. You know, in all these, like last week, I learned how to wrap all my tropical plants. I crossed that off my bingo card, you know, right. And it helps because I think it helps to come with a sense of humility, to recognize you come into a special culture. It's been here a long time. It's had to fight tooth and nail to exist. You know, I think about this question of belonging and why people get defensive about things. You know, there is this divide between before Katrina and after. And I'm very respectful of that. I feel so grateful to people who came back, you know, so that people like me could sail in and enjoy all the wonderful things the city has to offer. They came and they mucked out their houses and they dealt with the mess and all of that and rebuilt this place. So I hope to never emulate that experience. I haven't so far. So I'm respectful of that divide in our experience and, you know, and I try to learn from people. I think we all have things to learn from New Orleans, especially when we talk about storms and climate change and crisis and disaster and social injustice. Like I say, New Orleans is some ways, you know, you can look at it as a place where all these things are kind of in your face. You can look at it as a place where we have an opportunity to learn how to confront a lot of these major issues that no one's going to escape. And we are, I sometimes joke that New Orleans is like, you know, an adult child of an alcoholic family, like really, really good in a crisis, not so great at day to day, just normal living, right. But give us a crisis or a problem, man, we're right on that. So I think I've drifted from the original question.
No, I think that's really true. And so I'm going to comment, but I'm going to give you guys a heads up. What I am going to ask you about next is sort of the difficult things in New Orleans, but the two things, the comment that came up in our Facebook group the other day about you can't be a tour guide if you're not from here. It made me chuckle, one, knowing that you are a tour guide. Charles Goldberg, another friend and member of the community, retired here and is very active as a tour guide. Two Chicks Walking Tours and NOLA Architecture Tours are two companies that I recommend to everyone. Both, full disclosure, have been sponsors. Both Katrina at NOLA Architecture and Christine at Two Chicks do a great job. As it turns out, neither one of them are quote-unquote native. Christine went to college here. I won't disclose for her sake how many years ago, but she went to Loyola and then stayed, but she's from New York. Katrina is also from the Northeast and run two of the very finest, not just by me, but look at TripAdvisor, two of the very best, most highly rated tour companies in the city, and they aren't from here. And so I think that's kind of a load of BS. To be a tour guide, to get your permit and to do it well, you have to go through a lot of training. You have to really learn the city inside and out. So I agree. I just sort of chuckled at that. It doesn't mean that someone who's an eighth generation isn't going to say something, but that's just the way it is, right? So with that, you guys kind of alluded to it. I think, Chris, you are right. It is much more the northernmost point of the Caribbean than it is one of the southern parts of the United States. And with that comes some dysfunction, right? I mean, whether it's crime or politics or potholes or infrastructure, it was never easy before Katrina to be a New Orleanian. I would tell you it is multiple times harder to be a New Orleanian post-Katrina. And yet people do it, both people that have stayed for their entire lives and people like the three of you that have come. So we're at 1 hour and 7 minutes. So we won't spend an hour talking about this, but you alluded to it, Jen. So I'll start with you that, you know, when you come to New Orleans and all of a sudden it's not the fairy tale of waltzing in and going, hear great music and having terrific food and then going back to your home somewhere else. How does that affect you? How does it influence you? And does it change your opinion of having come here with the slowness, the dysfunction, the kind of cost that is being a New Orleanian?
So Chris and I will have very different answers to this question, but once I adjusted to the fact, sort of to the transition of working and living life rather than vacationing here, honestly, for me, it's been a non-issue. You know, the things that, and not to speak for you too much, Chris, but the things that make other people nuts and sometimes make Chris crazy, I find charming. I have a fondness for our emerging sinkhole. And I like so there are a couple in the neighborhood. There's one that's like a baby sinkhole at our intersection. There's one further up the street that was a real sinkhole.
It's a multi-generational sinkhole.
It
is actually what it is.
That one got filled in with sand by the city, and we sort of made a beach scene and like put a beach chair.
Potholes get decorated here.
Yeah. So I truly, for me, and this is not, you know, Pollyanna or overlooking, for me, part of the what I love about the city is the grittiness, is the authenticity. I don't want to live in Disneyland. I don't want to live someplace. I've never wanted to live in the suburbs. I want to live someplace where people are living real life. And, you know, the potholes and the fact that trash doesn't always get picked up, that, you know, for me, that's worth it if I have a second line down the street and I have fabulous neighbors who look out for one another. And so for me, the hardships are not a hardship. I think that's not the case for everybody. I think
right.
There are people who move here who want all of the beauty of New Orleans and the wonder of New Orleans, but want the efficiency of other cities, and you're not going to get both.
No, not here.
Yeah.
I liken it a little bit to, I lived in Minnesota for a couple of years, and people get tired of the snow, right, and want to move, but I wasn't from there and didn't think I would be there forever, and so I never kind of lost wonder with that. Having spent most of my life in New Orleans, I would I would disagree with you slightly. Like, could you just please pick up my trash and maybe fill a pothole once a decade would be nice, you know? So I'm on a little bit, but that's from the better part of, you know, 40 of my 50 years, 50 plus years being here and just like, come on. That does bring me to your point, Kieran, about crises. Two things, hurricanes and floods, we do well. We come together. The infrastructure somehow pulls itself back together as best it can. I'm going to leave the Corps of Engineers out of that. And I'm sorry for those of you that listen, but that's a scar from Katrina. I think they've done better since. Luckily, we haven't been quite tested as much since then. The other thing, and again, it came up with Arthur Hardy last episode, is you think about Mardi Gras and how many people are in a compact area, how much alcohol there is, the density of the crowds. You have these moving floats. You have a lot of opportunity for things to go wrong. And for all the valid criticisms that I and others make about our police force here in New Orleans, they get that right. You know, there are amazingly few problems. The biggest danger you run into at Mardi Gras is getting knocked under a float. And more often than not, thankfully, that only happens once every decade or so. And it did happen a couple of years ago, twice. But in most cases, that is the person not being responsible or an adult not being responsible for a child. But I don't know the stats on it, but I almost would bet that crime outside of pickpockets and public nuisance kind of stuff goes down. The city gets that right. They do it very well. You know, and we talked about that in the last episode, so you can listen to that. Chris, I guess I'll turn to you next. So what's it like, with some of these,
you know,
these issues?
Not to defend my character, but Jennifer and I are not quite as far apart as she might think. So I actually have kind of come to, if not quite love, at least
our pothole,
have some affection for the whole street situation. And I understand the dysfunction from which it stems, maybe more than a lot of people. Mark, you and I were peers at VA, and so we know how a government organization works, and sometimes best intentions don't turn out so well in execution. So, you know, and honestly, when you're walking out on a Sunday morning and you hear a running river under your street and you call 311, usually they're going to come out and at least stem that, you know, if not actually fix the pothole. And there is an entire Instagram account, which I'm not sure I'm allowed to actually say the word, the handle on this.
You can.
Podcast.
We'll put an explicit tag on this episode.
Yeah, so it's
fine.
The name of it, you really, if you don't follow it, you should. It's called Look at This Fucking Street.
Right.
And it is a daily cornucopia of all of the dysfunction around potholes and streets and things in town. So that you can laugh at. I'm with you. I would love it if my trash were picked up on a consistent basis.
In Central City, it is. It's remarkable. Our new neighborhood, it's fantastic. Like,
and now you have two neighborhoods to compare and contrast.
Yeah, they've skipped a couple of days, though, already.
Much better than the Irish
But
Channel.
Post Ida, that was a complete... I mean, and look, again, that's born of crisis.
Ida was a year ago, though.
Chris. Yeah, I know. Like, but post Ida, that was, you know, it's born of crisis. I get it. You're not going to recover right away.
I'm still paying for 2 days a week of trash pickup.
And so am I, you know. And right. So, yeah, everybody's paying for 2 days a week of trash pickup, and we're only going to get one. And you know what? We're probably only going to ever get one.
We only really need one.
So.
Is the recycling ever coming back?
Right.
Well, they do pick up recycling now, and I strongly believe that it doesn't actually get recycled, but it does get picked up. So, yeah, I mean, those are the things that are kind of annoying, but... The rest of it, you just, like I said a minute ago, with the whole Northern Caribbean perspective, you just have to kind of shrug at it a little bit and move on. At the same time, I am a big fan of, you know, holding council accountable for these kinds of things, holding the mayor's office accountable for these kind of things. I certainly can't speak for any of those people, but there's a recall effort going on right now with the mayor. I don't know if it's going to be successful or not, but... Those things don't happen in the absence of problems, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some. I mean, look, there's corruption. There's corruption everywhere, but we do seem to have a particular corner on the market here. As I said before, maybe us in Chicago, in America, have perhaps the most robust cultures of that. So, but yeah, on a day-to-day basis, things work reasonably well. 311 is pretty good, which is, I'm sure a lot of you have 311 in your local communities. Where if you need something, you put in a request and it happens. I do share your frustration. I've been trying to get a recycling bin for our rental house for about a month now, and it hasn't shown up. So you know that kind of thing doesn't happen. But yeah, I'm trying to take it. I'm trying to take it all with a grain of salt and be a little bit less, because my blood pressure will help. Will be a little bit better.
Yeah, I think there's a balance. I don't want to sugarcoat it. I also don't want this to turn so dark that people think, oh my God, you know, why live there? What about your experience, Karen? Because again, you've lived in several places outside of New Orleans and several places in New Orleans.
Yeah. So when we moved, we were on the road with our U-Haul. I was in our family car following our U-Haul with my husband in our caravan, making that final move down to our first leased apartment. It was July 2019, and I found out about, just as we were going through like Manchac, you know, really where you cross over into the swamp, I found out that all the utilities that were supposed to be turned on were in fact not turned on, which everyone's nodding around the table, because of course, why would they be? Mm-hmm. Just because someone told you they would be. So we arrived in the middle of July to a hot, un-air-conditioned apartment with no water. We all spent a long, dark night of the soul in my husband's little flat, one-room flat on Magazine. Liz, God bless her, let us park the U-Haul at Le Jouet parking lot. And I was sure it was going to be ransacked. And if it was in the morning, I was fully prepared to look at my husband with all love and devotion and say, you know what? This long weekend thing has been working for us. I'm going back to Little Rock. Good luck to you. And then 2 weeks later, Tropical Storm Barry came through. We were down there in Tulane Gravier, and I woke up to tornado sirens going off. I spent 25 years in Tornado Alley. I mean, I was like, what's going on? Why am I hearing the tornado sirens on my phone? And then the rains happened, the street flooding that was quite dramatic. People have seen in the national media. I look out my balcony. You could literally float a boat down my street. There were kids swimming in the water, which every mother on the block was like screaming, get out of the water. Do you want hepatitis? No, that's how you get hepatitis. So like you know, trial by baptism by fire is what I'm saying. I got all of that stuff the first month here, and I stayed. Mm-hmm. I really had some second guessing when it got, that's when it got real, real. And we've since had, and then, you know, pandemic hit. Talk about wow, bad timing for just moving to a place where you don't have that network already established. And so thankfully we had friends that we met through the podcast. Who became kind of our little bubble through that hard, difficult time. So we weren't completely isolated. We had our own little makeshift community. You know, there's always something. There's always, this summer we discovered that, you know, your ceiling will cave in if you don't treat the swamp mold that can grow in your air conditioning, which is kept in the attic here because, of course, you don't have basements. And, you know, everybody we said, yeah, our ceiling caved in this weekend, said, oh, yeah, well, that happened to me. Like, like, oh, okay, maybe put that in the welcome to town pamphlet, you know, next time.
Put that with the swarming termites.
Right, the swarming termites. And, I mean, poor Mark. It's like we're going on.
They're cute.
But,
it's,
you know,
fine.
Every time something like that, it weirdly and perversely maybe just tightens my grip on this place. I'm like, I did that. Yay. We got through that. And you have to develop a sense of humor, like, and a sense of just, you know, like, okay, there's a trade-off. I don't like to marry the two, like we can't have a safe city and still have a culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a false narrative that needs to be questioned a lot more than it is. But, you know, there is, you know, a lot of character here and character building opportunities, let us say.
And I think for every hardship there, and I agree with you, I don't think that you have to have hardship in order to have character, but for every difficult experience, there are wonderful stories that come along with that. Yeah. Like we still have wax drippings on our porch from coming back post Ida and sitting on our porch with a few neighbors who had stayed. One neighbor had a little bit of ice, and so we had cold beers by candlelight on our front porch. And that kind of thing is wonderful, as awful as it is to be without power or, you know, air conditioning, anything like that.
When pandemic hit, I know we're going to time, but, you know, the thing about pandemic, I thought if I have to go through this anywhere, I would go through it here because this city knows how to do a crisis like that. It knows how to come together in the face of something that seems unknown and impossible and really hard.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. This is really sappy, and I have said this to, I know the two of you, and I think I've said it on the podcast. I have always believed about my hometown that a good day here is better than a great day almost any place else. And I've lived in, I think, 11 cities. And a great day here is sublime. And does it take away the aggravation of some of the things we've talked about in the last 10 minutes? No, it doesn't take it away. But I've lived plenty of places where everything worked and everything seemed, you know, a good value and all of those things. And the place was so sterilized that it just wasn't for me. And I also get that people make other decisions, right? And so if you're listening, if you've made it this far, an hour and 20 minutes in, and you've listened to the last 10 or 15 minutes and you're like, that, there's no way, well, then maybe you do just come visit. But the flip side, I think what we're all saying is sort of eyes wide open. You know, there's really great community and really great opportunities. And there are some things that have been bad for a long time. And Chris, as you pointed out, we should try to hold people accountable and we should try to improve them. We also have to kind of do that with an eye towards, that's a long, slow march here in New Orleans, you know, and I think in some ways it's better. I will mention, I tend to keep politics out of the show. Our councilman here, Joe Giarrusso, is very, very responsive. There are others on the council that are responsive when you bring up issues. They run into the same headaches, you know, in terms of trying to get trash cans, for instance. But I do believe that there is so much good that it does offset, but you also can't come in sort of not believing you're not going to run into some of the difficulties you guys mentioned, because you are. Again, another plug for people like Tommy and Liz and the community. You know, find a community. Again, if you're listening to this, you already have a community here and rely on that community. So with that, we've been going a long time. I thank you, Kieran, and you, Jen, and you, Chris, for joining me today. I appreciate your honesty and sharing your experiences as New Orleanians that have been here for a little while. Thanks also to our sponsors, Travel Chasers, the Historic New Orleans Collection, Liz Wood, and Tommy Manzella. A special thanks to our Patreon supporters, especially our newest patrons at the $10 level or higher, including Heidi Weber, Eric Hoffman, Duke Harp, and Michelle Madden. Thank you very, very much. If you want to support the show as a patron, go to patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. I also want to thank my wife and kids who have had to put up with us sitting here for an hour and a half and have been very, particularly the kids. Marie would be quiet anyway, but the kids have been really good. I'm not even sure they're both in the house, which might account for part of it. But last but not least, be sure to pick up a copy of my travel guide called Beyond Bourbon Street, An Insider's Guide to New Orleans. It's available online at many bookstores and from me directly. Links are in the show notes. Sophia just showed up, and would you like to say what you say on recording? Would you like to just do it?
I don't even know what I say.
Until next time? No, you don't remember? No. Oh my gosh. How about buy Dad's book?
No.
You usually say if you love the podcast, share it with friends.
As a transplant, what's your favorite thing?
You want to come real quick and say what's your favorite thing about New Orleans?
Snowballs.
Snowballs? Where do you like to get your snowballs from?
Hanson's.
And who owns Hanson's?
Miss Ashley.
Yes, and we love Miss Ashley, right? We also did an episode about Hanson's snowballs, right? Yeah. So snowballs are not open 12 months a year. Sophia's very upset with that and a little bit upset with Ashley, but that's all right. Anyway, links in the show notes to everything we talked about. And with that, I will turn it over to my daughters, whose recording is about 5 years old. They would like you to know they are no longer babies. They are 11 years old, and we need to record their closing again. But with that, I'll turn it over to them to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.